Hope it's on.
The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia,
as the executive director.
Michelle Meyer, I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
We don't have a lot planned for the program, so we're just letting them clap tonight.
Yes.
No. Why not?
Right.
Okay.
Took a while. That volume was down. Welcome to the program. My name is Mike, and Ron is always is with us on the program. Well, I got to say, I have done a couple of solo shows in the past 2 years.
You definitely have.
You skipped town on us twice.
Yeah.
So
you've done well on those solo shows. I have to admit.
I don't know. But anyway, thank you. And so you are here, as always, with us Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It is All About Wine. And I just changed the episode information. It was originally on New Jersey Part 2, but due to some circumstances, we are going to have maybe we'll do a little bit of it, but it's going to be a general wine talk tonight. So please be sure to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Get on our phone lines right now. Area code 646-727-3235. Area code 646 is located in it's like in space somewhere, but it's 646-727-3235, and we'll put you in the screening room, find out what you'd like, if you'd like to go on the air with us, and then we'll put you on the air. You can talk about wine, W-I-N-E. And we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call during this hour. We have 57, well, on my clock, it's 57 minutes later.
we were just talking about it earlier. Mike and I are both right here together, and yet our clocks on our computers are like 30 seconds off from each other. It's just it's driving us crazy.
And even the little countdown timer is off, because she was like, you know, 10, 9, and I was already a minute into the program. So I don't know what's going on.
And I was like 30 seconds, 40 seconds away from the program.
Yes, yeah.
It is crazy, you know.
Right. It kind of confuses the product. But anyway, we're here, and, you know, give us a call. And Ron, Florida Estates Winery, and you have a wine fest coming up. We'll have that ad coming up a little bit later, so or whenever
maybe
you want. And
maybe even a couple of times we'll have that ad coming up.
Yeah, yes, we can do that too. We have a whole plethora of sound effects we can play during this hour. So,
there you go.
Yes.
Get a chance to throw a little bit of everything in just for kicks.
Absolutely.
We were going to do part two of New Jersey tonight, but we didn't get an opportunity. The reason is I contacted the people who were going to talk. We had a guest that was scheduled for last week, and she had a family emergency. So she wasn't able to join us. So we said, how about next week? She said, okay, and I've tried to get a hold of her. In fact, I've been trying to get a hold of her, and she hasn't responded to me, so that took care of that. There was another guest that I was going to bring on that does a business out in California, a wine business, and I was going to bring them on. They are unable to do it tonight, and so we are stuck with us. No guest speakers, just us tonight. And we didn't prepare for the next state, and we, we're expecting to go back and do New Jersey again. So I am going to hit a little bit on New Jersey. I'm going to talk about a couple, three of the vineyards in New Jersey and bounce around a little bit about the different ones in New Jersey and what they grow and what they have and all. We had two speakers last week. I put my paperwork away. I don't have their names in front of me. It was
last week we had Rich with Heritage Vineyards and Tom with Alba Vineyard.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And Rich and Tom, very informative, very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Here's my paperwork. I stuck it over out of the way to because I was getting ready to do move on to the next one. But Rich and Tom gave us a whole bunch of information about their wineries and about some stuff in the state of New Jersey and all that. And I just want to hit lightly here on more, since we did say we were going to talk a little bit about New Jersey, and if anyone's tuning in just to hear about New Jersey or their state or something like that, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the vineyards there and what they're growing and what they're doing. Wagon House Winery is located in Mellica, I believe it's Mellica Hill, New Jersey. Wagon House is actually it's Swedesboro is the actual address of it. They are open 7 days. Oh, I'm sorry, just the weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They're in the southern part of the state, and I will tell you more about it in just a second here, as soon as I get my computer to give me the information I want it to give me. The website's all about a little boy. It looks like maybe a grandson or something running around here, so not saying too much about that. They do custom labels of cheese. They do bread. They have just a variety of different stuff. They grow their own grapes. And I'm trying to get into the part where I can see beautiful house, beautiful tasting room. There's a picture on their website here. But they just a gorgeous tasting room. Wagon House Wineries is open. It's on the corner of Morrill Road and Route 45. Actually not in the South Harrison Township, but right outside of it. I'm trying to find their wine chair. Here we go. Well, no, that's not it either. Showed you how unprepared I was for this one.
That's the same city that Heritage Vineyards is located in, I believe. Mellica Hill?
Yes, it is.
That dinner. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're absolutely
that's interesting.
Right. I never noticed that. I'm going to leave them, and I'm going to go. I saw one in here, and when I was looking and searching and everything, I saw a vineyard here that really caught my eye, and I wanted to talk about it. Let's see if I can find it again here. Is it Unionville Vineyard? Unionville, oh yeah, beautiful, beautiful website here. Unionville Vineyards, it's on an 88-acre farm. It's the largest peach orchard in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, that just sort of surprised me that, you know, New Jersey would have the largest peach orchard in the United States, 88.9-acre farm that was part of the largest peach orchard in the United States. So maybe it's all split up now. It was a dowry left to the original owner's daughters, and so the winery building was part of the dowry, which was built in 1858. When the rust blight hit the peach industry in Hunterdon County after the Civil War, the orchards throughout the county were converted to apples. And then in the 1900s, the farm was sold and became a successful dairy farm. And then in 1965, it was sold, and the developers originally planted it in grains. And then in the late 1960s, it was used for raising horses and grain. And then in 1980, trying to save the farm, they started the Unionville Vineyards. And the vines were first planted in 1982, and the winery commenced in 1987. So this is an old historical place here, as you would think most of them in New Jersey would be because of its location and all that. Unionville Vineyards is a collection of over four farms with over 300 acres of preserved farmland. Mm-hmm. And it's a group of local landowners committed to growing the finest grape stock and preserving the land and the artesian style of winemaking. It is committed to the New Jersey commitment to Garden State, as we also heard from Rich and Tom. I mean, the designation of Garden State seems to be quite rooted in New Jersey growers there. It is the vineyard is open. The winery is open 7 days a week, and they are. Let me tell you about some of the wines they have here. Different grapes for different areas. Selected different ones. They have what they call the George Washington series. This is Revolutionary Red Farm. I'm trying to see what grape it is. It doesn't say on their website what grape it is. I'm hearing something. Who is that?
Somebody's speeding somebody.
Somebody wants to get out of town.
one of the bus people.
they ran out of wine or didn't have what they liked, so they left.
That was loud. That wasn't even a sound effect. I didn't push anything.
Did it? Oh, wow.
I should have recorded that one. Okay.
Yeah. That would have been good. But Unionville Classics, they make Chardonnay, Pinot Grigio, dry Riesling. And this is funny, too. They say dry Riesling and then Riesling, which is strange because the Riesling can be made in so many different styles, and they're actually distinguishing it. Pinot Noir, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon. So quite a diversified amount of wines and quite a few awards that they won over the years from their vineyards and everything. They also do a port. But this caught my eye because of the history behind this vineyard. It is really a classic area in there. They do a dry rosé, a soft dry rosé, all based on the George Washington series, or the George series is Lafayette's Pride dry rosé, Revolutionary Red, a soft dry red, Heritage White, Fields of Fire, Sweet Blush. The Fox series consists of Chardonnay, of Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, Merlot, Dry Riesling, Cabernet Sauvignon, Riesling, and a dry white called the Silver Fox. And they also have some premium wines. The Artesian series, which is a dry red they call the Cam Jam, the Big O Dry Red, the Juggler Dry White, a Late Harvest Cool Cool Foxy Lady, a dessert wine, made with Vidal Blanc, which sounds interesting, 9.2% residual sugar, which is really, really high. For those of you out there not familiar with how you measure the sugars, 9.2% is very high. Blush wines are usually around 3, 2.5 to 3, and so that just shows you an idea of how sweet those are. They have a dry white Chardonnay, a couple different ones, Pinot Noir, dry Pinot Noir, and a port wine. But Unionville Vineyards and Winery, located in, I'll let you know here in just a second exactly where they are located. It doesn't say. Let me back up so I can tell you exactly where they're located. Unionville is Ringgold, New Jersey. If you want to contact them, they are north of Trenton, east of Edison, in the south central part of New Jersey. If you need to get a hold of them, you want to get a hold of them, they do have a website at www.unionvillevineyard.com. Their email is uvineyard@aol.com. So, sort of a cool winery. New Jersey, the variety of wines and the variety of grapes that they grow in New Jersey fascinated me. It's just like it's on the line there. When you go north into Connecticut and to different places there, they're telling us, oh, we can't grow much of anything and all that, and these grapes won't withstand the cold. But New Jersey has enough ocean influence to keep the temperatures down, and it really is amazing how many different varieties that they do grow in New Jersey. It's fascinated me as I was doing the research on this. It's tremendous amount of grapes in growing there. I'll tell you in just a second here. Like I say, you can tell I didn't. let's see, where is it? Oh, that's what I want right there. I was. Dead air. We shouldn't have dead air, should we? We should be talking all the time.
The preceding silence is available for sale. If you'd like to advertise during the silence.
Yeah, we can flip on an advertisement there.
Right.
Most of the time we seem to be keep going, but one of the days, just one of those days, it just, oh boy, you know. Well, actually, I went out and played golf yesterday, and it was hot, and I probably got a heat stroke, and that's probably what's wrong with me. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's why I didn't, yeah.
That's good. How'd you do in golf?
It's a course I never played before, and up at Brooksville, it was Heritage, Hernando Oaks, and very nice course, a beautiful, beautiful course, well kept up, and well laid out and everything. And
I noticed you were talking about that, what you did for Father's Day and everything. I was like, just interested in, you know, you play quite a bit, it seems like, so.
If I can. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. I got a free round yesterday, and that's why I was able to play yesterday. But nice course, and, you know, if I can just bloody learn how to putt. I mean, you know, my drives are looking good, and my you know, medium game is good, but boy, I can't putt. It is so sad. But I did put in a couple of decent putts yesterday, which, you know,
very good.
I can't. I'm trying to find something here, and I can't find what I'm looking for here. And
I used to golf quite a bit actually, but the stupid windmill thing kept coming around and blocking the hole when I was putting.
Yeah.
It just wasn't happening, you know.
Yeah, he had to give it up. The clown closed his mouth too fast, and
yes, that's it.
There you go. Very good. Yeah. Professional mini golf players. You know that, don't you?
No.
There are professional mini golf players,
okay.
And they have, you know, tournaments, and they have all sorts of stuff, just like regular, you know, green golf and all that stuff, or, you know, links and everything. But there are professional mini golf players, and, you know, they get scores like 20, 21 on an 18-hole course, you know. I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, it's not unusual to get an 18 for some of them and stuff like that. It's just, it's, you know.
Is there like a professional league or something, or is it just,
it's all around the country and everything. When I first heard that, I thought, wow, that is really a cool thing. And so there is a professional league and everything for mini golf. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
You hear the.
I was.
You hear the. What? Hear the.
I'm having a heck of a time trying to find. I'm trying to find this one page that I was going to tell you about New Jersey.
I was just thinking, you know, you hear a hush in the audience as Tiger Woods steps up to the clown face, puts his ball down.
Yeah. I'll blow it, hit the mound.
Nail it over the ramp and through the building blocks. There it goes. He's having a good season. Oh, gosh. Or one of the other golfers. That's the first one I can think of right now.
But that he's good to pick on, though. So.
Yeah. Let me change the description of the tonight show.
Yeah, definitely. And those of you who are listening to this archive, sorry. But, you know, we have bad days, and this is one of them here.
You know? But, you know, whenever this happens, we get like hundreds of listeners on the stage.
I know. They go, listen to those idiots.
Yeah. We're 20 minutes late. We get, you know, 500 listeners. What? How'd
that happen? I know. It has too. I mean, it's happened so many times.
It's strange how they pick it up. Okay.
But we have a program that's really good. We both enjoy it. And then we look and there's four people. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see if this is the sign I want. I hope so. I'm getting tired of, no, this, well, I just, you know, it just, it never seems to, when you try to find something fast on the internet, it just never seems to come up fast. It always seems to battle you, and I don't know.
Right. Well, there's always HR 1161. There's
a good
state regulations. What else do we have? I don't know.
Well,
there's different
things. Say goodbye to New Jersey then, since I can't find anyone to talk about. We'll say goodbye. Goodbye, New Jersey. And we're going to talk, as always, we talk a lot about HR 1161. 1161 is still out there, folks. Have you contacted your congressman? Have you gotten a hold of him and said, stop this tomfoolery? We need to do that. If you haven't done that yet, do so. If you don't know how to do it, go to freethegrapes.org. Simple, easy. Freethegrapes.org. Freethegrapes.org will put you right into the site. And in fact, I'll pull it up here in a second, and I'll be able to tell you exactly what's in it and what's on it and what to do with it and all that. But freethegrapes.org is a great site. It talks about the different laws that are going on and everything. And it's very anti-1161. There was a little video on freethegrapes.org, and I won't play the soundtrack for you because it's like 3 or 4 minutes long. Maybe I should. That would kill some time. But I will... basically, what he's saying, just to understand what this is going to do, what freethegrapes.org is trying to do, and what 1161 will do. The man explained it like, if you are a big fan of Wisconsin cheese, and you are having Wisconsin cheese shipped to you all the time, and all of a sudden, they say, you can't have Wisconsin cheese anymore because it has to be controlled by your state. All the Wisconsin cheese you want is no longer can be shipped directly to you. It has to go through a distributor, and this distributor will decide what states are going to get that Wisconsin cheese and what states are not going to get that Wisconsin cheese. And so, therefore, you're at the mercy of the distributors, and you got to listen to what they say and ship it to where they want to ship it and do what they want to do. That's what they're talking about in 1161. And it's not just for wine. You have to realize that 1161 is for all spirits, all alcohol. It will involve everything ranging from boutique wineries to small breweries to all sorts of spirits to everything that includes alcohol. 1161 is basically turning all this over to distributors, and that's it. We have no other leg to stand on. This is all they're doing. And because of that, well, let me see. Maybe I can get the volume. Maybe you can hear this. I don't know if you can hear this or not.
Way back in the background.
This bill, H.R. 1161,
oh, there you
is
go, there
a new version
go.
Of a bill that failed to come to a vote in the last session of Congress. It is backed by the middlemen, beer and wine wholesalers. Everyone in the winemaking business should know about this new legislation and personally take action to make sure it fizzles again. Picture this. Artisan cheesemakers in Wisconsin and Vermont want to sell their cheeses directly to consumers in the 50 states. Meanwhile, out in the 50 states, cheese consumers want the opportunity to buy these cheeses directly from the producers. Where else are you going to get a rare smoked Chevreux from Vermont when it's not sold in your local store? But then, the Cheese Wholesalers of America introduced a bill that would give the individual states the authority to obstruct the home delivery of out-of-state cheese. Oh, and not incidentally, the bill more or less secures a monopoly for the cheese wholesalers while raising prices for consumers. That is basically what H.R. 1161 could do to wine. It could give states the authority to override the Supreme Court decision of Granholm v. Heald. This decision in 2005 cut down the trade barriers that the states had erected 7 years earlier against out-of-state wine, beer, and spirits. Even more basically, H.R. 1161 is just a bad idea because it contradicts good old American values, reduces freedom of choice for consumers, and makes it more difficult for U.S. vendors, thousands of whom are very small family-owned businesses, to make a fair profit. We think H.R. 1161 is poor lawmaking. So do lots of other observers, including the Wall Street Journal, which ran a very pointed editorial against it. I want to urge all winery owners, employees, suppliers, and all concerned consumers to help make sure this legislation goes away. All it takes is for you to communicate with your members of Congress. Ask them not to support the beer and wine wholesalers monopoly bill. Let's make sure that H.R. 1161 dies on the vine again. You can go to freethegrapes.org for more information and to send a personalized message to your representatives via their website. Thanks for listening to Wines and Vines' opinion on H.R. 1161.
Wow. Okay. That was the editor for Wines and Vines. He introduced himself at the beginning. You might not have heard that, but that was the editor of Wines and Vines. Wines and Vines is actually a professional magazine. Anybody can get it. Most people in the winery business subscribe to it. It's a very, very good magazine. I absolutely love it myself. But that sums it up right there. It's just absolutely ridiculous what this 1161 will do. His name is Jim Gordon. He is, like I say, editor of Wines and Vines. And it tells you what 1161 is all about. There is the last word I got on 1161 is it is sponsored by a bunch of representatives. There's a whole bunch of House of Representative officials, elected officials that have put their support behind it. But so far, no one in Congress. So we can cheer our congressmen that they're not buying into this. So far, mm-hmm. No congressman has agreed to sponsor this and get it before the Congress. It is before the House and a bunch of representatives there, but not Congress. Maybe this thing will die and die a good, hard death and won't be brought back up again. But as it stands right now, it is it's sort of in limbo. They're trying to get somebody from Congress. Now, you need to get a hold of your congressman. You need to do this. I mean, this, and again, I repeat, this isn't just for wine. This is for all spirits out there. This is your little small breweries, the ones that are all over this country that are so so popular now, and the ones that are making some of these great little niche beers. It will affect them. You won't get
microbreweries, I guess. They have. Yeah. Wow.
It'll affect the microbreweries. Close to us here, down in my. In fact, my daughter was telling me about. My daughter and son-in-law were telling me about this on Father's Day. There is a new little shop down in Wesley Chapel, which is not too far from where we are here, and they sell 300 beers from around the country. They have all sorts of different little microbrewery beers and stuff like that. That is one of three of them I know around the area. If this bill were to pass, that would stop. And I don't drink wine. I'm not concerned. Well, you need to be. If you drink anything, you need mm-hmm. to be. It'll all start going through the distributors. It'll set back the wine industry. It'll change. Let me go through this. I think I've done this before, and now is a good time to revisit it since we do have the time. When Congress set up, or when the government set up all the rules and regulations and laws and everything, they gave the states a lot of power. The Constitution gave the states a lot of power. The federal government actually regulates the overseeing of the states more so than the states oversee us. And so the states have a lot of power. And the federal government basically regulates what's going on there, like, you know, free commerce. You can't stop commerce from one state to the other. You have this free commerce trade and stuff like that. And this was set up way, way back. Well, prohibition came into effect in 1918. And actually, it was voted in 1918. I think it came into law in 1919. But when prohibition came into effect, it stopped alcohol consumption in this country. Well, when it stopped alcohol consumption, it actually stopped alcohol production. And so, it, you know, the ramifications of it changed the country, changed how this country approached. And since we're all about wine, I'll talk about wine and not particularly any other type of alcoholic beverage. But it changed the way this country was in wine. We've talked to states in the Midwest already. We've talked to Missouri. We've talked to Kansas. We've talked to Nebraska. And if you remember, and if you want to look back on the archive programs of those, you'll remember that a lot of the wineries told us we were some of the largest wine-producing state in the country before Prohibition. And all those states were there. Missouri was making a ton of wine, as was Kansas, as was Kentucky and Nebraska. And, you know, you can go and name all of them in that part of the country. And before Prohibition, they were the wine-producing states. Prohibition came in and stopped that. And the only wineries that survived were the ones that did the Sacramento wines, or who, if they didn't do Sacramento wines, that they switched over to grape juice or to other forms that were with grapes but not fermented. And these are the ones that survived. A lot of them went out of business. And if you look on the old programs, the archives again, you will also see where a lot of these places will say, we are just now recovering from Prohibition, or it's taken us this long after Prohibition to get started up again and all that. Prohibition did a major number on this country as far as winery goes. It changed the outlook. In fact, in my class, I always ask the people, there are three P's that changed this country more than anything. It's not profit and it's not people. What are they? And it's phylloxera, Pierce disease, and Prohibition. Prohibition probably being the biggest one. And I won't get into phylloxera or Pierce disease right now. But the Prohibition was repealed in 1933. I think it went into effect in 1933, 34. I don't have numbers for sure. But when it was repealed, what they did is said, what are we going to do? How are we going to put this back into effect now that everybody can have alcohol? And they said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll throw it back to the states. We'll let the states decide, because the states have their freedom. They have all this stuff. So we'll let the states decide how they're going to handle alcohol. So they turn it over to the states. At the time, and I'm not making a political statement here, I'm not trying to upset anyone, but at the time, organized crime in the mid-30s was very strong. You look at history and you can see that. What's one of the things that you always hear about organized crime doing? Distribution. And so organized crime says, hey, you know, you need a distributor for alcohol. You need somebody to distribute that out to everybody. You need someone to take care of this for you, in the middle person. So a lot of the states said, okay, we will have a distributor. And they set up what they call the three-tier system. You had your manufacturer, you had your distributor, and you had your retailer. A lot of times, the states made it that you could not own all three licenses. You could only own one, two of the license, but not all three. And if you were a distributor, you couldn't own a manufacturer license. Or if you were a manufacturer, you couldn't own a distributor, retail, and stuff like this. So many states set it up, but basically they stopped owning all three licenses. So you had to use a distributor if you were going to get your product out there to the people. this went on for many years, and it bounced around. I mean, some of the biggest companies in this country are distributors right now. The Southern Wines and Spirits, and nothing against them. They do a great job, and they're wonderful. They're located in Miami, but boy, are they enormous. They handle so much product. It's just they're a multi-billion-dollar business because of the distribution. And they got fleets of trucks and all sorts of stuff, you know, thousands of people working for them. And they stretch all through the southern part of this country over to Texas. They bought up some other distribution companies and stuff like that. So Southern Wines and Spirits is one of the biggest ones. But then about 10 years ago in Minnesota, or Michigan, in Michigan, some of the small wineries there said, wait a minute, by having to go through a distributor, this is stopping my fair trade rights to be able to ship these to other people. And so they sued. They sued the state to get open up their right to be able to ship out of state and to be able to ship to other people. Lower court says no. They appealed it. Higher court suggests. Then it was appealed again. The higher court still. It went to the state Supreme Court in Michigan. They ruled, and it proceeded to the Supreme Court of the United States of America. During this time, New York State joined the battle. There are a lot of boutique wineries, a lot of small wineries in New York State, and they joined the battle, and they were suing for it too. When they were doing that, the Ralph Nader Ralph Nader fame, you've all heard him, consumer advocate. Ralph Nader joined the fight on the side of wineries, and he continued to support it and argue it to the Supreme Court, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. The Supreme Court of the United States heard the arguments, and in a 243-page decision, they ruled that you're right, it's not fair. That was their ruling. It wasn't you get the right to ship. It wasn't you can't ship. It was simply you're right, it's not fair. And they threw it back to the states again. And the states said, now you have to work out something. You have to decide how you're going to do this. Some states said, okay, we'll just open up the shipping to everyone. Other states says, well, if you're shipping within the state, you can't ship out of the state. Others say you can't ship in the state, but you can ship out of the state. In fact, we discovered that with Arkansas. When we talked to them, Arkansas can ship across the state lines to Missouri and Kansas and Oklahoma, but they can't ship across the street. But every state started to do their own little thing, and they started to make up their own little rules. The trade journals I get every month to come out, and there's new rules and regulations there. There's new places you can ship to and new places you can't. Basically, it is to the point now where if you pay your fees, if you pay your shipping fees to the state, then you can ship into that state. That's why whenever you look on a website and it says we ship to these states, not because they can't ship to other states so much as the fact that it's cost prohibitive for them to have to pay the fees to ship to certain states that they might not ever recover their fee every year, which is understandable. I mean, it's good business practice. Some states have very high fees. Some states have very low fees. Some states say, no, you can't ship to us at all. They have went through things where you can ship to us if the person bought their wine in your winery, and you can have it shipped to you. Others say you can't ship to us unless you have a certificate or something. Other states say it's regulated. You can only get 9 gallons a year shipped to you. You know, all these different ways that they do it. There's no ways to control, no ways to do it. The argument that was constantly being brought up was, well, when you ship wine, children are going to order wine. Teenagers are going to order wine, and they're going to get drunk on your wine. Well, you know, let's think about this just for a second. You know, We've all been young. We've all were children. When you're children, you don't stand there and say, okay, I'm going to get on the internet. I'm going to order some wine. I'm going to get my parents' credit card. I'm going to put it on that. I'm going to wait 5 or 6 days until the wine arrives here, and then I'm going to get myself some wine so I can drink. What you do is you take your money, you go down to the local 7-Eleven, you wait till somebody walks in and says, hey, buddy, can you give me a six-pack? And that's about the way children drink. Well, back, if you remember when we talked to Marilyn, and you can go back to the archive program on Marilyn, the gentleman that was talking to us said that Marilyn had a study and putting out rules and stuff. And one of the things they did is they had the comptroller of the state of Maryland had to do a study on shipping and how it worked and how if children ordered and all this. After this study was done, it took him 2 years, I believe he said, they found that children don't order wine online. It just, it's ridiculous to even think that they do. And they have found that shipping, and they did this big study and all that stuff, and they found that, you know, the benefits of it and everything, it just far outweighs any negative things that you can find in shipping of wine. This Maryland study and this Maryland thing has been noted so well that I believe the guy that was talking to us, and I'm sorry I can't remember his name right now, but the guy that was talking to us said that there's been like 30 to 35 states that are asking for copies of this so they can use it as some sort of basis for shipping within their state. So it's an ongoing thing, refining and developing ways to do it and all that. But with this 1161, that will stop everything. That will basically say, state, you have to go through a distributor. It has to be taken care of that way. You have to do that, and it stops the fair trade, which is ridiculous. We've came so far. We've battled so long, and we've came so far to be able to do this, and then this one bill can just, you know, slice it, everything right out from under us, slice the whole platform we've built completely out from under us. So it needs to be stopped. And again, we're all about wine, but it also affects microbreweries. It also affects small distilleries. It affects everybody who wants to get their alcohol out there and do it themselves without having to go through a distributor. And you ask, why be so concerned about a distributor? Well, one of the reasons is that distributors require money. They're not going to do this for free. I just told you that Southern Wines and Spirits, a multi-billion-dollar business with fleets of trucks and thousands of workers, they don't make that just by taking my wine and putting it in a store and then not charging me extra or charging, getting it somewhere. So they have to get the money someplace. So what they usually do is they charge the winery for it. There's two things I can do as a winery. I can raise my price of the wine to compensate for the distributor, or I can absorb the cost of what I'm doing. If I absorb the cost, my profit margin goes down, and it puts me on a very close edge of not having profit or staying in business. So therefore, I have to raise the price. Now, you're not going to go down to the store, pick up a bottle of Florida Estates wine, which you've never tried, and buy it if it's $15. It doesn't happen. We all know that. We all know it's never going to happen that way. So therefore, it sits there on the shelf. And it doesn't sell. And then if it doesn't sell after a period of time, Southern Wines and Spirits tells the grocery store, mark that down to half price or three-quarter price and get rid of it, and then they charge us back for the difference. This is why we don't want to go through distributors. This is why we want to open this up so we can do direct shipping. Contact your congressman. Contact your representative. Contact anybody you can think of anywhere, anyhow, and get them to do something about this. What you can do is you can go on to SaveTheGrapes.org, and there's links on there I think there is. I'm not seeing them right now. I'm on Save the Grapes now, and I don't see the link that I want.
Yeah, same here.
If you go to the HR 1161 link from the top menu, and you go to that page, about the second link down on that page, it says how to oppose H.R. 1161.
It gives you
information down there on it only takes 2 minutes. They can personalize a letter to your congressional representative. There's three different steps you can take and to get some action on it. And it looks like step one is actually to contact your own representative and get something done. I was just looking at the site while you were talking about it. So it's really an informative site. You can go. It tells you state by state the different regulations that are affecting each state and who allows direct shipping, who doesn't allow direct shipping. It's and then updates on like Florida. I didn't realize that had passed in Florida, or I mean, it didn't pass in Florida where there was what was it? Maybe we did cover that. Senate Bill 854 and House Bill 837 would limit the shipments, and apparently that was taken off, so we don't have to.
That was defeated.
But they have all kinds of information on. You can sign up for the newsletter and get email alerts and information that way. But they do have quite a bit of information on freethegrapes.org about H.R. 1161. It's a really good website. I should try and contact them.
You can go on that. You can go on that on there, like Mike just said, and just click on Contact Congressman. All you need to do on that, what it does is it gives you a link and asks you what state you live in. It pops up the page. You click what state you live in. It tells you these are your congressmen and representatives. Would you like to send them an email? And it pops up, and all you need to do is just go down to the bottom, fill in a little bit of information, and click send. I mean, it takes you 3-4 minutes at the most, and that's it. It's taken care of. And it's that simple. And the more letters, I mean, you don't have to change the wording for it. It just says basically I'm opposed to 1161 and, don't vote for it and all this stuff. And, that's all it takes. So, it's very simple, very easy. So if, by all means, people, I mean, this is something. If you're a wine drinker, if you're a, do we have a phone call?
No, that's
somebody ringing a glass.
Weather alert.
Oh, weather alert.
Yeah, all broadcast stations are required to have a automatic weather alert system. So there you go.
Yeah, we're broadcasting that.
Yes, I was looking up the Maryland page that I have, and the only person we talked to was Charlie from Frederick Winery or Frederick County, Maryland.
That's him. Yeah.
Yeah, he talked, and he was. Yeah,
he was. He's a member of the board or something. The state board or something. That's why he. Very very interesting conversation with Charlie. Yes, that was Charlie. Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about the Winery Modernization Act that would allow direct shipping, and they said they could not import bulk wine, but they can import the juices though. So, he was talking all about those. Things down.
Very good. That's why we keep around. That's why you get the big bucks.
That's why I get the big bucks. Yes. There we go.
There you go. I knew there was a reason. I wasn't getting any new words.
I'm getting the big bucks here. Okay.
No. But, 1161 is a nasty thing, people. And again, you're listening to All About Wine, so obviously you're a wine enthusiast. But if it's spirits or if it's beer or if it's anything, this will affect everything. We can't say enough about the fact that this bill needs to be shot.
They tried something before, what was it, last year, that 5034, I think,
in
2010. So they tried this already, and nothing got out of the committee, and now they're trying to file it under H.R. 1161, and I guess it's a little bit of rewriting of it, but it's still all special interest. It's legislation, and they're going to make it sound like they're trying to protect you, the general public, but it really is not, and it's only out there for the wholesaler and to line their pocketbooks and everything, and it's going to really hurt the industry, like you said, not just for wine, but alcoholic beverages, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Anyways, it's going to do that. And I was looking at the congressional sponsors, and it was introduced by 8 congressional sponsors, and 3 of those are from Florida, which is it's Florida.
Scary.
But yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So we have our issues here in Florida. But definitely go to that page. Click on the HR 1161 link at the top of the Free the Grapes page and read the information. And down there it'll say how to oppose it. And it's really simple to do there. So definitely we need to oppose that. So what do we have? 9 minutes. Okay. I'm just keeping time.
10 minutes. It depends on whose clock you're looking at.
Yeah. Oh, see? I have 9:18, 17:16. I have 9 minutes and 15 seconds.
I have 9 minutes and 47, 46, 45. So, yeah, hey, I know. It's just, what can we say? So, 1161. We've talked about it enough again. We will not stop talking about it until we find out that the thing is dead and buried and gone and
yeah.
And it's just a faint memory that we can say, yay, we buried it. So, do something. Do something. It's better to do something. I mean, pick up the phone and call or write your own email or go to Free the Grapes and click on HR 1161 or whatever you do, but do something. Because when you don't do something, that's what gets these things passed. So, the subject I was going to hit on tonight, too, and I got carried away with 1161 again. And I say again because I do get carried away with 1161. I was going to talk a little bit about global warming and how it affects grapes. Whether you agree or disagree with global warming, and I you can't really disagree. It is getting warmer. They've really shown that. But the data is really, really quite evident out there. It's quite striking. Global warming. Now, globally, the average surface temperature has increased by 0.6 degrees centigrade, or that's about 1 degree Fahrenheit, since the beginning of the 20th century, okay, with two-thirds of this change occurring since 1970. All right, now, again, whether you agree or disagree with global warming, that's a fact there. That is a fact. Global warming is... whether humans cause or not is controversial, but the current debate centers on the precise effects of increasing atmospheric greenhouse gases. And this is being caused by all sorts of stuff. There, in Australia, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but in Australia they're thinking about having camel hunts and putting a bounty on camels. The biggest herd of wild camels in the world is in Australia right now.
Wow.
They were introduced over there many years ago because of all the deserts and dry lands, and they were released and they're running free and all that, and they say that camels produce more methane gas because of the gas, the grasses they eat and then processing it and then expelling it, that they produce more methane gas than any animal on Earth. And so they're thinking about putting a bounty on camels out there to cut down on cutting down on the camels completely. But a couple of degrees doesn't sound like much, but it really is quite huge when you start thinking about it. There's a significant relationship between vintage ratings and monthly average growing season temperatures in most regions. Now, consider this, okay? Wine regions around the world, the predicted temperature rise by 2050, and that's only, 39 years from now. Now, this is in Celsius, but to give you an idea, 2 degrees Celsius equals approximately 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. So this is the average temperature. So in southern Oregon, it's predicted by 2050 to be 2.35 degrees Celsius warmer. Overall, Northern California 2.16, Barossa Valley, Australia 2.01, South Africa 0.88, Chile 1.84, Southern Portugal 2.85. You're looking at about 4 and a half degrees warmer in Portugal. In Rioja, Spain 2.52, Chianti, Italy, 2.30. Rhine Valley in Germany, 1.51. Moselle, 1.51. Rhone in France, 2.26. Loire Valley, 2.14. Champagne, 1.51. Burgundy, 2.26. And Bordeaux, 2.33. Now, these are degrees Celsius equals 3.6 degrees. 2 degrees Celsius equals 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. By 2050, these changes will affect. What this means basically is that the currently cool regions that are in the country in the wine-growing regions are going to warm up. You're going to have longer growing seasons. You're going to have earlier springs. You're going to have later falls. You're going to have warmer days. The hot regions, the grapes will ripen to a sugar-ripe condition but lack the flavors that it takes time to develop. They need those that coolness to develop the sugars in it. In California's Napa and Sonoma valleys, the climate has become so warm that ripening fruit is not an issue, but retaining acidity and developing flavor has become increasingly more difficult. And it's showing that in certain areas like Chianti and Barolo and southern France, Hunter Valley, parts of Chile, Central Valley of California, this is affecting there too. So this global warming, I mean, we think about global warming and all the aspects and what it's going to do, what it can do to grape growing regions. Napa Valley might not be the region. We might not speak of Napa as Napa in the grape growing region. We might be speaking of Southern Oregon as taking over. And Napa is going to be like the Central Valley, just too warm to grow a lot of the grapes that they grow now. So this is, you know, I wanted to hit on global warming. I wanted to spend more time on it, but that's just a little taste of global warming. That's just a little bit I wanted to tell you about global warming. It's something that is really quite scary just a little bit of climate change can do to grapes and the growing seasons and everything. So
yeah, definitely.
But yeah, well, we're at the end. We did make it to the end.
Oh, yes, we did. And you have an event coming up this Saturday at the winery. Are you ready to, we can do the announcement on that?
By all means.
Okay. We'll be back in 1 minute and 15 seconds.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Boom.
Very nice.
That has a lot of bass to it. I don't know. On my headphones, it sounds like it has a lot of bass. It's like, It's like, oh, my gosh. Okay. Anyway.
90 seconds. You can also get in touch with All About Wine at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. If you want to get in touch with me, I check that, you know, quite a few times a day. So if you have any questions, if you have any suggestions for subjects or anything that you can think of, get in touch. Or if you want to be on the program, if you're in the business or something, you want to be on the program, we encourage you to do that also.
That's right. And we can actually run past 8 o'clock.
We can, yeah. If we want to, we can. We have.
We can, but I tried calling on the guest line, the 646 number, and after 8 o'clock, you cannot call through. So, yeah, and I don't even know if we can call out after 8 p.m., but I think we can have all of our guests on from 7 to 8, and then we can just continue on.
Then we can just continue. Well, once the guests get on there, though, they can continue talking. It doesn't cut off the phone call.
Correct, yeah, because I'm on it. Yeah. I'm on it myself, and it shows me as being out of time now. And you still have 30 seconds on your
part of the show. I have 30, 31, 30, 29.
See?
But they'll probably cut me off in about 5, 10 seconds here. So.
Okay.
Yep, 10 seconds.
Okay. Everyone have thank you for listening, and we'll see
you
all next week at 7 p.m. on Thursday. New Mexico, for next Thursday, unless something happens between now and then.
We're recording now. We're no longer on the air.
Oh, yeah, I see that. Okay. So,
but we're on archives, so all of you people are still listening. Thanks.
We are on archives, yes. Thank you very much. And and Dan's still on. So apparently if you get on the phone before 8 o'clock, then you're good to go. So that's really cool. Good. What else? I'm going to see if I can I've got an email thing getting ready to go for one of these people. So for Free the Grapes. I don't know. We'll see. Be interesting. What else? I guess that's it.
That's it. New Mexico next week.
New Mexico. Join us.
Travel down to the desert. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Very hot desert.
very hot desert. Yeah.
All right.
I'm checking the temperatures for Tucson. Tucson is like 108 today.
Oh, wow.
That's in, you know, Arizona, obviously, but, you know, it's all right down there in that area, so.
Yeah.
It should be interesting.
They're boiling down there. We had a couple of people in chat. We had like four or five people different times in chat. I guess that was it. So we'll see our regular archive listeners next week at 7 p.m. Eastern time right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we'll go into the green room real quick.
So we'll see you all next week. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you for listening.